Okay. I am Kathy Yeshkeviak, and I am a parish nurse. My experiences started probably by being born into an Irish Catholic family. At the age of 7, I had my first nursing uniform that was imported from Ireland. Oh, yes. I have no conflicts of interest. I should know better. I got my first nurse's outfit from Ireland. But then I went to the oldest nursing school in Philadelphia, which was St. Joseph's Nursing School. Got my diploma there. Got my bachelor's at Holy Family and my master's at LaSalle. So basically, it's a complete and total Catholic education. I've been a parish nurse forever because if you're listed in your parish as a nurse and the Monsignor wants you to do something, he just doesn't even hesitate to call you up and tell you what he'd like you to do. And most people would do it. I, on the other hand, would argue with him that some people really ought to be doing things for themselves who just were choosing not to. But, you know, we kind of got past that. People who really needed something, we made sure we got it for them. And we had a religious nun who actually took in calls and did the kind of referrals and things like that. So nurses didn't really have to go back and do those things. That was way before the Archdiocese actually started a parish nursing program. The parish nursing program itself was started as a pilot program from Holy Redeemer Nurses and two of our local hospitals, VNAs. They started the project. It was a 3-year project, and the Archdiocese was so happy with it that they do pay the parish nurses, who are the cluster nurses. There's 5 for the city. That means 1 for each area in Bucks County. And so I guess we'll start from here. This is just my goals and objectives. And it's... Oh, that's my thing. Okay. And basically, I'm a parish nurse that I get support from 12 other nurses. Because I'm not the only one who does visits, but I do most of them. And a lot of the nurses who support me work in the hospital because I haven't worked in a hospital for 20 years. So it really helps me to have people that I can call for whatever the particular problem is. So I have the 12 nurses. I'm supported right now by a great pastor. If we tell him we want to do something, we can get the money for it. And the stewardship committee, which gave me a line and a web address so that people can contact me. And initially, the office didn't really see why I couldn't give them the passwords to these things, and I had to change my passwords. But eventually, there was a nurses' retreat that was done by the parish nurses, and last year they had a lawyer who was great, and she said we were right, and to tell the pastor to call them if there's any problem, so nobody's going to have that problem again. Because they wanted to be able to access your email if it was getting too full or something, and we told them no because there were confidentiality issues involved. So the parish cluster nurse is Teresa McCausland, and each cluster, what she would do, she may see some people, but primarily what she does is go out and talk to parish groups about parish nursing, because just because you happen to live in a parish and be a nurse doesn't necessarily mean you really understand what you're going to do as a parish nurse, but also the limits that you're going to function within in the Archdiocese of Philadelphia, because part of the pilot program was that they would never compete in doing physical care or provide services that should be paid for, you know, through the insurances, because it was really funny. The first meeting I went to before that even happened, before we established the Archdiocese, when we had a parish nurses meeting, more than half of the people who were there were from insurance companies trying to find out whether they could use us as a resource. So, you know, it really had to be, you know, cut and dry that, no, we were not covered to do that. Teresa does a lot of other things, too, because she'll coordinate with each parish. You'll see a couple of different, things that they set up, programs that were set up. And while they may be done in one parish, if they're good, then, you know, they translate them to all the other parishes. And she helps them helps formulate it into a program so that even if it only works for 1 or 2 years in that particular parish, basically you have a manual for it if any other parish has to pick up and, you know, like start a program that's similar to that in the future. And Sheila McMasters is now our direct is the head of parish nursing, but she's also the director of COPE. And COPE is the community care options for the elderly. And the Archdiocese of Philadelphia basically expects people to age in place. They weren't really involved in a lot of assisted livings or independent living, you know, like arrangements, things like that. We do have some nursing homes that come under the Archdiocese, but the I keep forgetting this. Okay, let's do this. But basically, the Archdiocese expects people to stay in their parishes, and that parishes are actually a natural retirement supportive environment because they're around the people that they know. They're around all the church organizations and groups and things like that that they already know. But what COPE does is that they help, and this has 300, but I understand now it's been like 450 elderly just this year that are helped, because we only have so many Catholic nursing homes for people to go into. And when they have to go into the nursing home, very often they'll say they want to go into a Catholic one, which is really wonderful because they have the whole culture there that supports them. But there aren't as many places as there are Catholics in the city of Philadelphia. So a lot of times the people have to go into another nursing home and may eventually get into a Catholic nursing home. But as most of you know, by the time the people get, you know, an opening for a Catholic nursing home, they've already acculturated to the nursing home that they're at. So there are also a lot of things that, you know, basically they supply like pastoral counselors and, you know, what would be ombudsmen and other situations. Another program, because Catholic Care Options is a program, and let me just say for the Archdiocese of Philadelphia, they don't start the program and it works down. All programs kind of filter up. You do them, and if they're successful, you come under the umbrella of the Archdiocese, which is why parish nursing started as a pilot. It was successful, so it comes under the umbrella now of the Archdiocese. And they have a lot of different groups that, at the community level, for the people, that really it depends on what is required. It is on the left. It just kind of tells you all the different things the parish nurses do, and you know, it's 2,000 home visits, phone calls, and different programs that they do, and having some of the students work with the Archdiocesan Parish Nursing Program. One of the ones that was developed was the Supportive Care for the Dying. That's a community model project where they collected a lot of information that eventually they set up in boxes that went in the back of each of the churches. And you would think that, you know, you would want something more personal, but as a first step, a lot of people prefer to pick up information and then start to come into the system. These are two other resources that I'll be talking about a little bit later on, so I wanted to give you some more information. HOPE is actually, it comes under Catholic Social Services. It's the mental health arm where people volunteer, and if somebody is homebound, because it's for the elderly, and there are mental health services, behavioral health services for people who are homebound. And they have the counselors who come in. They do bill for services if the person has insurance. If the person doesn't have insurances, then the services are provided. They have counselors. They also have a psychiatrist who does prescribe and talk to the person's individual family. So that's another program. It's on a different side. It's not where the parish nursing is, but we really can access anything pretty much within the Archdiocese. The Caregiver Support Group was actually started by Teresa McCausland, who is our cluster nurse, and she does it in two of the parishes. That one's in the afternoon for older people, and there's also one in the evening. And she does them so that people who are caregivers, if they can get time either way, it doesn't matter that, you know, the parishes aren't so far apart. They can get to one or the other as long as they have some kind of relief, someone who can come in and stay with whoever their person is. And they have monthly meetings, and I actually started going because of this lady that I'm going to be talking about in a few minutes. And I found it so helpful because I was dealing with my father, who was making me crazy, that I actually kept going. And Teresa's had this running for quite a while now. It's like 10 years almost. And she does it so that, you know, like there are two or three people who have been there for a while. They may have actually lost the person that they were caregiver for, but they then take on the role of being, you know, like, you know, a resource for the new people who are coming in. Because this isn't just for people to come in and cry. It's for people to come in, talk about their problems, and try and identify solutions. And I'm trying to think, we were at one of the other ones, another session, and they were talking about how stressful it can be when you're a caregiver, that you can't really even think what you need because you're so busy doing. And that's one of the things that this is really helpful with, because as you're talking, somebody else picks up on things that you may not even realize you need and can start suggesting some resources and places for you to go. But you also had, because it's religious, you know, we have our function every year for a holiday, and there's a social event that happens once a year. And once a year they have the caregivers retreat. And this one I have up here is for last year. This year we just had it before I came, and the three topics were estate planning, not necessarily for the caregivers, but to understand all the things that are required for the people that you're caring for, things that you should have. Some of the things that became an issue are, you know, all the forms we have now for confidentiality. It can become a problem if you have to get information for somebody that you don't have a signed release on, and the family's saying, you know, I need information. The doctor's saying, I can't give it to you. And you're saying, she's crazy, and you got to give it to me because we got to get something done. And the other session was laughter, and it was hysterical. It was a really good session. And the last session is on community resources, and it talks a lot about the things that are available, like day programs, respite. You know, for us, we really recommend it. It's a program that comes out of Temple. It's very inexpensive to have somebody come in for, you know, a short amount of time if they're not doing personal care. And, you know, how to access the Philadelphia Corporation for the Aging and start, you know, to get on their list, to get possible services and things like that. So these are some of the things that we have access to and that we had to use for this particular case that I'm going to be talking about. But in St. Catharines, it's bottom up and top down. It can be people can be recommended either by talking to someone at the convent, the rectory. We have people who go out as pastoral ministers. If they see a need, they can let us know. And the initial nurse is always, or the initial contact is always made by a parish nurse who does an assessment. And there are three nurses now that do the assessments. And then you form a plan, which is basically, you know, no different than anything else, and you follow along with the needs and try to muster the resources of the community right in the parish, but also the community at large, because Philadelphia is a very big city, and, you know, there are quite a few things that we can do. So to address caregiver stress, we start by identifying the community resources and try to bring people in as much as possible and encourage them to connect with the caregiver support group and start to decrease their isolation. So the case that I'm going to be talking about today, it starts in 205. One of the priests who went out to this family called and gave me the heads up that there was an issue. So I went out to visit them, and the wife had just received word that she had a recurrence of cancer and that she would have to go into the hospital and have treatment initiated there for radiation. And she had been the primary caregiver for her husband for 17 years. And he really only has one arm that was functional. He could walk a little bit, like 1 to 2 steps, if he had his braces on. And it was really difficult in that the biggest concern is that he had very poor impulse control. And he would yell at her because he also had expressive aphasia. You would hear a lot of cursing, and, you know, she would feel impelled to, you know, apologize for a gentleman who never used that kind of language. And, you know, you have to keep reminding them that, you know, you do understand that that's not necessarily the way that person would normally speak, and, you know, not take it personally and things like that. But the husband is actually alert, and it's only when he gets frustrated that he gets very loud. And the biggest concern, though, is that he's a very big man. So if he gets frustrated and, you know, starts, you know, striking out, it can just be dangerous to anybody who's around him. And then with his wife getting the bone cancer, obviously getting the radiation, that's going to be all the more concern that, you know, he may not even realize it and, you know, be putting his arm out or something and really be doing damage to her. He was actually resigned to going to the nursing home, and even though he seemed to not remember that he had had a bad experience in the past, but the wife and the family were adamantly against it, but they did understand that, you know, he might have to go for a short period of time. So this woman who I encountered really was on the cusp of panic with catastrophic thinking all the time. That was where her normal level was. But the husband was stable, and the wife hadn't made a priority of her own health, so we really had to encourage her to do that and support her as much as possible. And she had very little contact with other people. She had a weekly group of three or four friends who stopped by. But other than that, you know, like, there was really nothing. She was totally homebound at this point. There had been times in the past when she had volunteered at school, because he could be left alone for short periods of time. But that wasn't to be right now. So as it was described by the wife, okay, the husband's needs are that he really needs 24-hour-a-day care to stay in the house, or he would have to be in the nursing home for the short term. The wife had so much anxiety, especially since the diagnosis of cancer, and the concerns about her husband and the nursing home, that she really was just, you know, like, unable to think of anything else. To top it all off, she had unresolved grief because she had just had two losses in her family. Her strengths were this group of friends that came regularly, and one particular friend who took her to all her doctor's visits, especially once the cancer diagnosis came through. Her friend was very faithful in going in and you know, discussing everything with the doctor and helping to bring the information home. She did have a daughter, and the daughter worked full-time, and she was a single parent. And she was able to support the wife, but she was realistic in saying that she could not take care of her father as well. So it was an understanding pretty much from the beginning. They also had two sons, but the sons were pretty far out, so they weren't really helpful in this situation. They owned their own home, and they had sufficient finances just to meet the everyday. They really didn't have any reserves. Their car was 15 years old. The 20-year-old grandson did sleep in the basement, but he worked 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, so he was really just there in case his grandmother needed somebody at night, but he wasn't really able to do a lot, you know, with the grandfather. It wasn't like he would calm down if he heard his grandson. So after the assessment, the plan was that I would visit the husband in the nursing home at least for 1 hour once a week and be the wife's eyes and ears while she was there and start a regular kind of visit schedule with him so that I could become familiar with his pattern of speech, because his level of frustration was so high. He really had some interesting patterns. He had some therapy, some speech therapy, where someone had taught him to go through numbers. So he would start going through numbers, and you'd have to figure out what had some relationship to a number three, what had some relationship to a number seven. And, you know, like, those kind of things, his wife was obviously better at it. She'd been dealing with it for 17 years. But I, on the other hand, had to really start picking them up. So what I would do is bring books that had pictures in them with some words. I mean, they weren't children's books. But, you know, like, it would start to, like, help me to identify when he would point to things and start giving me words or phrases that I could understand better. And now we do pretty good. I can do a whole hour visit and find out something that I didn't know in advance. So, you know, we're getting there, and it's only taken, what, 3 years? but it was also to really encourage the wife to pursue the Philadelphia Corporation for the Aging and start getting services in. Up until now, she had been providing all services. So the husband was really, really very focused in on her. And, you know, of course, he doesn't really want other care, but he does understand that she's not going to be able to provide it. And one of the things that was going to have to be done was to help get all the paperwork done to get him into the nursing home. So the outcome was that once the wife was recovered, she had planned to bring her husband back home. So he was only going in for a short term into the nursing home, and that was the plan we were working with towards when she went into the hospital. But in advance of that, we really tried to start her, getting her more connected and more supported. So I got her to a grief group, and she was there for two sessions. And the leader of the grief group agreed that she needed this, but that she really needed the caregiver support group first. So we did make that switch. She stopped the grief group. We took her to the caregiver support group. But the positive thing was, even though she was only there for two sessions, she had a friend. And her new friend has actually kept in touch with her right up until this day. So she had somebody to start talking about her losses with, which was good for her. Then she started coming to the caregiver group. And as I said, I took her because, you know, she really didn't want to go. She was very used to being by herself at home and not up on her social skills. But it was great to see her blossom, like over, you know, a period of time of going to the meetings regularly. She got used to these people, comfortable with them. And as I said, they offered a lot of suggestions and support for the things that she was needing to do as a caregiver. And but her anxiety level was still very high. She was unable to resume her prior level of care for her husband. And one of the new stressors became worrying about the PCA caregivers not being dependable and showing up. Well, of course, when you start something, you're going to get a different person every day until they set it up so that you have the same person every day. So initially, it was very stressful for her. Oh, wind it up. Okay. And eventually, she was able to recover enough to volunteer for an hour a week in the library and in the local school. And she was able to do that for quite a while. Her husband didn't go to the nursing home because he had to. He ended up being in the hospital during that time. And when he came out of the hospital, PCA came through, and they actually provided a lot of services. And he did really well, as did she, for several years. Until this year, she got another diagnosis. The bone cancer was back. So the plan, luckily, I had kept up with visiting her husband, even though it wasn't every week when she was well enough to start doing it. So I restarted that weekly visit. And again, the girlfriend is taking care of her, going to the doctor's visits. It was very hard at this point because I had really developed her as a friend and her husband as the patient. And now she really needed a parish nurse. And she had a very hard time understanding that I couldn't do that because it would have been too many roles for me. So we finally got her to accept another person. There's another nurse who had experience in hospice who is a parish nurse. And we did do that. So she is finally connecting with that other person. And it looks like it's going very well. We had brought in Hope to deal with her depression. That's going very well. And at this point, she is calm. She is very accepting of whichever way this treatment goes. We've gotten her ready for all the changes that, you know, may have to happen, not just for her, but for her husband as a result. And while Aisha was talking, I took a look, and she only had four coping strategies when we started, and we've added eight more over the couple of years. So it's an amazing difference, you know, in the person that we have now and where she is. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there any questions?
All right, let's see who's the winner. Aisha, you want
to? You don't want to be responsible.
And you have to be here. If somebody left,
oh, and Aisha here. Okay, Norma Rudder.
Oh, Norma Rudder!
I think it's over there.
Oh, my lucky.
You're right.
Yeah.
Oh. Thank everybody for coming. Thank you so much.
This is your bag. Okay.
Thank you so much.
All right. And thank you very much for being with us. Thanks. Okay.
You know, I meant to tell the group.
I'm not worried.
Well, you know, when the group that I attend, I agree.
Who's Wally?
They can tell you. Kathleen asked about you. Okay. But if Kathleen asked about you, you would be much better.
Oriented to this